Let's go on to the second chapter now, which is about basic chemistry, which is important to understand if we're studying an organism, because what goes on in cells is really just chemistry. By the way, we're still in these introductory chapters. Like I said, most of the term is going to be one chapter at a time devoted to a different organ system. We'll go through all 11 organ systems. But these introductory chapters are a little bit weird compared to those in some ways, including their number of slides. This and the next chapter have a hell of a lot of slides, but that doesn't mean they're going to take forever to get through, because a lot of them are just examples, so we can go through them pretty quickly. I don't know how deeply we'll get into this chapter today, but let's start at slide one. All materials, all things that are material rather than just energy, like sunlight is energy, it's not a material. But all things that are material in the universe are made out of atoms, which are inconceivably small particles. Now your cells, remember how many cells I said you have approximately? 100 trillion cells, you know, which is a hell of a big number. A single cell is too small to see with the naked eye. Well, just in that invisibly small single cell, there are billions of atoms. Atoms are that small. So all things, not just organisms, all material things in the universe are made of atoms. And as small as they are, actually atoms are made of even smaller things that we call subatomic particles, because they're even small. They're under the atom. They're smaller than the atom. We'll talk about the three main subatomic particles in this course, which you can see in this cartoon view of an atom. An atom is made up of two or three of these, depending on the atom. But the three subatomic particles are electrons, protons, and neutrons. Now, let me pause here before we talk about the particles themselves and say that these aren't structures I'm talking about, but there are regions, three-dimensional regions within an atom that we differentiate. The nucleus is the central part of the atom, and so it's just a space. But that space is occupied only by neutrons and protons. You won't find electrons in the nucleus. And also, the neutrons and protons, however many there are found only in the nucleus. And then there's the space around the nucleus, which is occupied only by electrons, not neutrons or protons. Now, this is the so-called planetary model of the atom, because it looks like these electrons are planets revolving around a star. This is not the truth. This is just a cartoon that is okay to think about atoms this way just to make sense of it, but that's not really how atoms are. Anyway, you see the nucleus has some protons and neutrons. Neutrons are before I get into that, let me just say that protons and neutrons, compared to each other, are almost identical in their size and mass. The mass is how much matter they're made of. You can see that they're similarly sized in this picture. It's not exactly equal, but it's effectively identical. So there must be some other difference, since they're about the same mass, and there is an important difference. Neutrons are named for the fact that they are neutral with respect to electrical charge. They don't have charge. So they have a zero charge, in other words. Protons, on the other hand, are charged subatomic particles. And each individual proton has a full positive one charge. Now the neutrons, however many there are, don't add to the charge because they're neutral. But neutrons aren't even necessarily there. Every atom features at least one proton. If you don't have at least one proton, you don't have an atom. Okay? There might or might not be neutrons. Usually there are. But for instance, the simplest atom, which is the hydrogen atom, and the normal version of a hydrogen atom, is just a proton and an electron and no neutrons. And so you don't have to have neutrons to be an atom, but usually they are there, some number of them. They never contribute to charge, though. If you look at the periodic table of the elements, obviously those are elements, but what is an element? There aren't all that many elements, only 100 or so elements in nature, whereas there are millions so far. We're always creating new ones, but there are already millions of different substances. Only a few of those are elements. What is it that an element is? What makes something an element? Like hydrogen is an element, lead is an element. Those 100 that are listed there, what's special about them? An element is a substance that is made out of only one kind of atom. So there are different kinds of atoms, and that's true, namely the fact that there are different kinds of atoms, is true despite the fact that all subatomic particles of the same type are identical. Protons are just like any other protons. Neutrons are just like any other neutrons, and the same for electrons. So when we say there are different kinds of atoms, it's not because you're using different kinds of subatomic particles. What is different about different kinds of atoms? It's the number of protons that make atoms of different types different. Okay? And only the protons number matters. The number for the other things can change, but that does not change the element. So when we talk about hydrogen, which is listed first on the periodic table, these are listed in order of what is called the atomic number. The atomic number is this number in the upper right of each box. So hydrogen is number one, helium number two, then lithium, beryllium, and so on. That atomic number, as it's called, is the number of protons that that type of atom has. And that is the only thing that defines an element. In other words, an atom is a hydrogen atom only if it has exactly one proton. Any other number and you have a different element. Okay, so that's what an element is. It's if whatever sample you have of that stuff, if all of those atoms are the same, then it's an element. The vast majority of the substances in the world are combinations of two or more different kinds of atoms, which we call compounds. Like water, for instance, is a compound. Water is not an element. It's made up of two, in this case, two elements, hydrogen and oxygen. Okay, now, what kind of atom are we looking at in this picture? It is helium, because there are exactly two protons. Helium has atomic number two, and that's the only thing that makes it helium. Some helium atoms, by the way, will look just like this. They all have to have two protons to be helium. Some of them will have, in addition to the two protons, two neutrons, as you see here in yellow. But not all will have that. So they will all be helium, but there are different versions of helium atoms based on how many neutrons they have. What is the word that describes these different versions of the same element? That word is isotope. Iso means same, by the way. So you could have an isotope of helium with only two neutrons, for instance, instead of only one instead of two, or three instead of two. That's an I word that you should not confuse with another I word, which is what we give to an atom that has a charge. What is a charged atom called? That is ion. Okay? So when we use the word atom, we're really talking about a neutral atom. An atom is neutral, electrically neutral is what I mean. Overall, it is neutral because an atom, whatever type it is, which depends on how many protons there are, will have also the same number of electrons as protons. I actually kind of skipped a mention of the electrons, so let me get back to describing electrons. Electrons are much, much tinier than protons and neutrons. They're not at all the same size. This picture shows that a little bit, but it's making these electrons way bigger than they actually are compared to protons and neutrons. In any case, despite electrons being tiny compared to protons, electrons have just as big a charge as protons, but in the opposite direction. Electrons are charged particles, but they are negatively charged. But what I'm talking about on this equality of charge is that a single tiny electron has a negative charge that's just as big, a full negative one, as the positive one charge of one proton is, that's much bigger. Okay, and that means in an atom where you have the same number of protons as electrons, the positive number and the negative number add up to zero. Right? So overall, there is no charge for the atom, even though the particles making them up are charged. And that's when we use the word atom, when it is neutral like that. It is possible, though, to have charge overall. Now notice that there's actually four ways you could do this. You could add protons only, keep the electrons the same. You could subtract protons. You could add electrons, or you could subtract electrons. Well, the proton number under normal chemical reaction conditions does not change. The nuclei of the things that are involved in chemical reactions stay where they stay put. So you don't adjust the number of protons, but the number of electrons can be increased or decreased. And either one of those is going to change the charge, right? If you start with a neutral atom and you add an electron, you're going to have one more negative than you have positives. So it's going to add up to negative one. That's a negatively charged ion in that case. We don't call it an atom anymore. It's an ion. Technically, it's an atom. We just use a different word. And similarly, if you take an electron away, now all of a sudden you have one fewer negative than positives. And so that's going to end up adding up to positive one. So ions can be either positively charged or negatively charged. But they're still ions in any case. Okay, well, this planetary model I've already told you is not the truth, but it's okay to think about. This actually isn't the truth either. This is the so-called orbital model. For several reasons. For one thing, neutrons are not really yellow and protons are not really red, but it's kind of closer to the truth because you don't see the nice circular orbits that those electrons were in. Instead, you just see a cloud. And that's because we know that electrons are somewhere in that outer space, outside of the nucleus, but at any given moment, we can't really predict where they are. So this cloud just represents a probability space that they are somewhere in there. It's really better probably to conceptualize it simply as the planetary model because it's easy to draw and easy to think about, even though it's not the truth. Well, in slide 3, we see three atoms, and these are the first three on the periodic table. Hydrogen is the simplest atom, and the simplest version of the simplest atom, the simplest isotope, in other words, of hydrogen, is one that has just a proton and no neutron. Of course, every hydrogen has to have exactly one, otherwise it wouldn't be hydrogen. But most hydrogen atoms that you would encounter in nature has no neutron, just a proton and an electron. Helium has two. That's what makes it two protons. That's what makes it helium. Notice it has two electrons to counteract the charge. So a charge of zero. And then lithium has three. Now, the two electrons, well, you say this for all three. The circles that are these orbits that don't really exist, these are spaces that are called subshells. And they're not structures, they're just places, they're spaces. But the way atoms work is that each individual subshell has a maximum number of electrons that it can contain. And this subshell that's closest to the nucleus can contain a maximum of two electrons. So it can contain none, one, or two. For hydrogen, it contains one, but it could hold another one. The reason I'm mentioning that is because if a subshell gets full, that gives the atom, if it's the outer subshell, it will give that atom special stability. And so chemistry occurs, reactions between chemicals, occurs simply because when atoms come into contact, their outer parts, which are these electrons, get rearranged in such a way that these outer shells become filled and give the overall stability to the atoms. Okay? Well, helium is already stable just by itself because it has two electrons that fill this shell. Okay? And notice that it's at the right edge of the periodic table. Helium, because it has this outer shell filled, does not want to interact with anything, including other helium atoms, because it's content, it's stable as is. That's true for all the ones on the right edge. Their outer shells or subshells are filled, and therefore they don't react with other things. Those are the noble gases. They're inert, meaning they don't react. Lithium, on the other hand, has a full shell here, but it has a third electron it has to have. So you can't fit it in that shell. You have to go to an outer shell, which that second one can hold 8. And so it's not nearly full, right? And that's why it's not very stable. And it will react with things. And it's going to react in such a way that it's actually probably going to give up that one that it has, because that's a lot easier than taking on 7. If you give up this one, then this shell doesn't really exist anymore, and you're back to the stability that helium has. So that's why lithium reacts. Okay, let's look at 4. These are all hydrogen. Now, they don't say hydrogen in all of them, just one of them, but they are all hydrogen. You should know just by looking at them that they're all hydrogen, because each of them has exactly one proton, which is the only thing that makes anything hydrogen, right? But these are isotopes of hydrogen. Remember, isotopes are different versions of the same element that differ in their number of neutrons. Most hydrogens are like this, no neutron. But you also have two versions of so-called heavy hydrogen. Did I say nitrogen? Okay, heavy hydrogen. Deuterium and tritium are heavier isotopes because those additional neutrons, which are just as big as protons, make them more massive, more heavy. Isotopes are important for chemical reasons, but in as far as this course is concerned, isotopes are important in medicine, for instance, because for various reasons, but like when you have to swallow a tracer to get imaging done, that's usually a solution of isotopes that you're taking in that can be tracked because of their isotopes. They can be detected by instruments. That's what an isotope is, though. It's a different version of the element. Slide 5. This table just lists some important elements that make up the body. They've listed this in alphabetic order, not in the order in which they occur in the body. And this is not the only elements that are in the body, but these are the main ones. Now, when you look at the periodic table, those more than 100 elements exist as elements, but those things toward the bottom, as you get to the bigger and bigger atoms, the heavier elements, most of those you don't want to be part of your body at all. Living things tend to be made up of the smaller ones that are on the first few rows of the periodic table. There are some things farther down that you need, but you just need a tiny amount of. And then a lot of them will kill you if you have them in your body. So these are alphabetically ordered, but there are 4 on here that are especially important. And those are carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. Those make up the bulk of the body in terms of, if you think of a body as a collection of atoms, an enormous number of atoms. Most of those atoms are either carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, or nitrogen. And this is why we say we're carbon-based life. In chemistry, we use the word organic to mean carbon-containing. And so organic compounds contain carbon and other atoms. almost always an organic compound, in addition to carbon, has hydrogen in it, very often oxygen as well, although not necessarily, and sometimes nitrogen, and that's why those four are so important. The body is made up, or any body, not just humans, any organism, is made up of small molecules and large molecules. Like water is a small molecule, it's just not very big. But the large molecules, complex structures, are called macromolecules, which simply means big molecules. So, and all of those macromolecules are organic. We call them organic macromolecules. All organisms are made out of them. Well, there's many kinds of organic macromolecules, but there are four categories of them. And those categories are lipids, proteins, polysaccharides, and nucleic acids. All four of those are organic. All four of them, in addition to being organic, contain carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen. That's why three of the four are that I mentioned are so important. Two of those categories, namely proteins and nucleic acids. Nucleic acids, by the way, includes DNA and RNA. So proteins and nucleic acids, very, very important macromolecules in any organism, have carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. So that's why those are the four biggies. But all of these are important. All of these are vitally important. You'll die without them. It's just that you don't need nearly as much of the rest of them as you need carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. Oh, I better stop there.